joyful play,
purposeful work,
rugged outdoor living,
our camps and conservation efforts,
teach timeless skills,
and kindle the spirit within.
Farm and wilderness.
Welcome everyone to our first full episode of the Farm and Wilderness podcast. It's a snowy, wet day here in Vermont when I'm recording this, and summer feels so far away, but these conversations we'll be having this spring get me so excited for the summer. My name is W, and I'm both the director of Camp Timberlake here at Farm and Wilderness, and also director of coordination between camps, which means I help all of our camps be their best versions. I've been around a while, been on staff in some ways since 2007, and during that time was also a special education teacher, a math teacher, a school administrator, and a few other things. I'll be your host for this limited spring series of our podcast. If you're already a part of our community, welcome. I appreciate you taking a chance on our experiment here. And for everyone, I appreciate your patience in this experiment as we figure out how to do sound levels and all of these things that it takes to do a podcast. If you're new to our community, also welcome. This podcast is a new venture for Farm Wilderness, and this first episode will have a little bit more explaining than maybe we'll do normally in future episodes. I'll tell you about F&W. I'll go on a bit deeper into introducing our camp and guest for today. We'll do the interview, and then we'll end with some camp vocabulary. We've started this podcast to share about the amazing work we're doing as an organization and the incredible stories that come from working at a summer camp. This podcast is predominantly for current and former campers, staff, and families. However, we also welcome our fellow educators, members of the outdoor community, fellow camp professionals, and really anyone interested in the unique work that happens at this values-driven summer camp. And we really are driven by our values. We do all the things you expect from a summer camp. Campers will roast s'mores and hot dogs. They'll swim in a lake. They'll go on hikes. They'll sing silly songs. They also do things you might not expect, like eat family style every single meal, participate in chores that help keep camp going, help construct new cabins each summer, learn to milk a goat, and really just learn to be good humans in community. Our mission statement, which you'll hear at the top of every show, reads joyful play, purposeful work, rugged outdoor living. Our camps and conservation efforts teach timeless skills and kindle the spirit within. We do this across 7 camps, serving nearly 1,000 campers each summer in central Vermont. We have a mix of programs for kids 4 to 17, some are mixed gender camps, some are for girls and non-binary campers, and some are for boys and non-binary campers. We also have a conservation arm of our organization that works to conserve nearly 5,000 acres near Mount Holly and Plymouth, Vermont, which we'll hear more about in a future episode. Sustainability and conservation are key to what we do at all of our camps and the way kids live and the way our food comes in, kind of all of those things. Some of our camps focus more on the farming part of Farm and Wilderness, with goats and chickens and pigs and turkeys and carrots and kale and compost and kind of all the things the farming takes. And other ones of our camps focus more on that wilderness aspect, like living simply in nature, building fires, going on trips, feeling the rain on your skin, all that really great stuff that sometimes can be easy to forget when you live in a house in a suburb in the city. All of our camps focus on building good humans who are learning to live in community at camps with low competition, but big challenges for them to overcome. And that low competition and high collaboration is a pretty key part of our program. It's not about color wars or rankings, and no disrespect to other camps, but instead we focus on learning to live in community, which I think most of us can agree that this world needs a lot more of. All of our campers are unplugged, no devices, no screens, and many of them live in really simple structures, some three-sided with that missing wall facing one of two lakes. We're also a Quaker-based, although not Quaker-affiliated organization. So what does that mean? It means that we follow a lot of similar principles as Quakers do in our focus on simplicity, peacemaking, integrity, community equity, and service and sustainability. Those spices, as they're known, are actually part of our values. And you can find the full text of our values on our website. And at some point on this podcast, we'll release our camp buyer version of those values, which we recently rewrote to be both a statement of who we are, but also to be read aloud in a really unique way compared to other nonprofits and camps. We are not a religious camp, but instead Quakerism is really found in the ethos of our joyful play, purposeful work, and rugged outdoor living, and most visibly in the magic of a silent meeting, which each of our camps have every morning. Silent meeting is this really unique time where the entire community will come together in a circle and sit in silence and just listen to the birds, to the wind through the leaves, to the nature all around them. And what I find most interesting about this time as a former teacher is that so often in school, silence is a punishment. And at our camps, it's a celebration. It is derived from Quakerism's meeting for worship, and we don't necessarily use it for worship unless a camper or staff member chooses to. Instead, it really is about being together in a community in a really intentional and special way. Farm and Wilderness was started in 1939 by Ken and Susan Webb, and our very first camp was Timberlake. It's the one I run. And over the years, we've added other camps and programs, which we'll be exploring most of them over the course of this podcast. You can check out our website at farmandwilderness.org. We're on YouTube, we're on TikTok, we're on Instagram, we have a blog, and now this podcast, where we share stories of this pretty special and amazing place. To indulge a bit, this place has been life-changing for me. I was never a camper. I grew up in Texas, didn't really know that this sort of camp existed. And I actually found it as a counselor when I was going to school in Los Angeles in 2007. And it was a big leap, as it is for many of our campers, so I get that. And I found that no matter where I've worked after that first summer, in a classroom, as an administrator, running an extended day program, that I've tried to recreate the Farm and Wilderness-ness, that special sauce, this ethos, kind of everywhere I could. And I really hope that more folks find us. I hope this podcast helps with that. And I think that we truly have something to offer to the education ecosystem. Back to the topic that we are talking about today. So I mentioned some of our camps are more farm and some of our camps are more wilderness. And the camp we're going to talk about today is so much that wilderness part of our name. Flying Cloud, or FC, today serves boys and non-binary campers aged 11 to 14 in a community of about 30 campers and 10 to 15 staff. It's one of our smaller camps, and as you'll hear in the interview to come, I actually think that's part of its magic and intentionality. At FC, campers live pretty ruggedly. They help pump the water, they help cook their meals each day of an open fire, they get up with the sun, and they go to bed at dark. They don't have wristwatches or flashlights. They are living pretty simply. And if you're listening to this and thinking, I don't know if I can do that, I think after you listen to our guest today, you might reconsider that. On each episode where I interview a camp director like today's, I'll give you a bit of the history on that particular camp. And most of this history will come from the book Beyond Our Wildest Dreams by founders Susan and Ken Webb, and was recently revised and updated by Christy Webb, their granddaughter and current board member. Flying Cloud was started in 1964, and like several of our F&W camps, was originally an outpost of Timberlake. It was situated on newly acquired land near Mount Holly, Vermont, on Saltash Mountain. In its second year, it became its own camp, no longer an outpost, and was led by its first director, Bob Hausman. Bob and his brother, Rick, had virtually grown up at camp from the ages of 10 and 8, and he was in his early 20s when he took over at FC. Bob directed FC for 3 years before his brother Rick took over. And in the book, it's said that Ken Webb was delighted, Ken, the founder, but surprised by Bob's move from Timberlake to FC. And Bob reportedly said, "Ken, I hope this won't offend you, but in returning to the camps next summer, I don't want to be at Timberlake. I'd like to be up here at Nineveh and kind of, well, on my own, partly, that is." Nineveh refers to Lake Nineveh, which Flying Cloud, Red Spruce Grove, and Saltash Mountain or Sam Camp are all around. And I can sort of feel Ken's response to someone saying, "I don't want to go to Timberlake. I want to go to somewhere else." But Bob and his brother really helped build this camp in the early years. Now, let's talk about that name. The name Flying Cloud is actually to honor a Timberlake counselor named Wakio, or sometimes with a G, so Wagio, a member of the Akwesasne Mohawk Reservation near Hogansburg, New York. During World War II, he was a fighter pilot in the South Pacific and earned the Purple Heart. After the war, he was accepted into Dartmouth College and had the stage name Flying Cloud, and he conducted years of educational events throughout the Northeast to support his family. At Timberlake, he taught campers the way of his tribe, and at that time, he created a village, then called Indian Village, no longer exists, next to a small river that would eventually be called Indian Brook, which eventually would be the name for the girls in non-binary camp, which in the last few years has been renamed to Firefly Song, which we'll hear about more in that episode. Wakio later was recalled by the U.S. Marine Corps to serve in the Korean War. He became a warplane flight instructor in North Carolina, and tragically, on September 30th, 1952, he was killed in an aircraft explosion. Camp Flying Cloud was named in his honor, and to really remember how formative his contribution was to Ken and Susan Webb, and really all of Farm and Wilderness in those early years. Today, it's led by Elliot, who's been at the helm during some time of transition over the last few years. He's been working to keep it true to its mission of living ruggedly and building good humans. He graduated from Warren Wilson College and has been at FC for nearly 10 years. And I give you all of that background and intro because you'll hear Elliot discuss a bit what so many camps have been grappling with, which is our origin stories and the Native American practices that are often appropriated by camps, including at times Flying Cloud. He's such a good guy. He's incredible at what he does, an incredible person, and I am so excited to have him on our first episode. Our second episode will actually be connected again to Elliot and Flying Cloud as we share stories from ice cutting, the epic winter event we do where we literally cut ice out of the lake with saws to keep the ice house cold at Flying Cloud during the summer. If you're considering sending a new camper to FC, or I'm just curious to hear from the current director or curious about the changes over the years, I think this chance to hear the intentionality and thoughtfulness that Elliot brings to his work will convince you that it's the right spot for your new camper, that FC is in good hands, and that it is being set up to really thrive in the years to come. And now on to our conversation. Welcome, Elliot. Really glad to have you today. And Ellie and I were just talking before we got on that we really haven't had this sort of conversation together. Our work has been so parallel in camps that serve similar ages and gender identities, but very different. And so I'm very excited to hear about that. But first, let's start with you. How did you end up at Farm and Wilderness?
Yeah, thanks. I'd be really happy to be here with you too. This is very exciting. I love podcasts, so psyched to get started. So it's a funny story. I like to say I was headhunted. In truth, that's actually not what it actually was. I was just recruited in an odd way. Zach Podhorzer, the former director, was connected to this bakery that I had lived and worked at called Tinder Hearth, over in Brooksville, Maine. And he was looking for a baker that summer. Oddly enough, they were looking to expand the staff team in some like interesting ways and bring some like cool quality, different programming in. And so I was hired as the camp's resident sourdough baker. I piloted that like staff, role basically, and it stuck around for a few years, but yeah, basically I spent that whole summer and the summer after like baking sourdough bread in our wood fired cob oven, which was an incredible, strange, cool experience.
I love that story. And they're all so different from everyone, but from like baker to camp director is not an obvious like path.
No, not at all.
Did you picture yourself as director?
So that's what originally brought me in. And I made the switch after 2 years from support staff. That's what the baker role was, into being a counselor. I was a counselor for 2 summers. I was trips coordinator for a summer, and I was assistant director 2 summers after that, moved into the director role in 2020. I didn't see myself as a director coming in I didn't like have dreams or aspirations like that first coming in. It was just like my love for the place and all of the like incredible potential that I saw in it. And the like effects that we were having on our young people. And like, that just like kept me coming back. Right. And then I came back enough times that I started having those conversations with Zach of like, hey, like, are you interested in secure on long-term? Like, is this a passion or is this something that you're doing? Yeah. So I didn't. And it felt like sort of just a continual opting in. And then it got to the point of like, oh, actually, this is something that I could see myself doing. So it took a little while for the vision to develop, but.
Yeah. I completely relate to that. And I think campers might imagine directors as somehow being born into the role or something we always knew we wanted to do. But similarly, like, it was not on my radar when I was like a young counselor who barely knew what I was doing. So I completely can relate to that.
Totally.
Let's talk about Flying Cloud. So for our listeners, every camp has a number of program outcomes that we've been working on that are all in alignment with Farm and Wilderness. And I absolutely love these three words that really ground Flying Cloud. And so let's talk about appreciation, courage, and responsibility. What does that look like day to day for campers?
Totally. So it's interesting. The way that we crafted these outcomes and the real specificity of those three words, it's really tough to look at all, like our program is very, very complex, just like yours is at TL. It's like tough to look at everything we do and say, how do these three words possibly capture all of it? And obviously like they don't, it's not perfect, right? But I do think that when you look at almost everything that's happening at Flying Cloud, you could point to something and say, what are we hitting here? And I think that you could trace it back to one of those three outcomes. It's kind of like there's a route leading down from every activity into the ground. And it's like, they all do sort of converge. And so you wouldn't like, I think it would take a little bit of work or framing to step into the space and say, ah, yes, they're developing this thing. But with that lens on, you can see like, oh, right. There is like actually a lot of courage in this camper, like just speaking up in front of his peers.
That's so interesting because we both are working with male and non-binary and masculine identified campers.
Yeah.
How do these three words really fit into that aspect, right? I think when folks think of, you know, typically quote unquote boys camps, maybe courage, but not necessarily these three. Let's talk about maybe like appreciation at camp.
Yeah. There is actually something really interesting about like if you were to sort of superimpose these words onto like some idea of masculinity and say like, how do these fit in? There's sort of like an interesting thing to be said there, right? I think courage is a really natural one, right? That's in the like cultural masculinity. I think that's also in the vision of like what masculinity will look like in 10 years in our cultural lens, right? I think appreciation maybe less so 10 years ago, probably more so 10 years from now. But yeah, I think I see these, all three of these as like really necessary components for a young person who is growing into a man, or has been like socialized as a man, a young man, and is like exploring their own gender. I think actually these are actually some pretty solid, particularly I think courage and responsibility, because those are really, I think really heaped on boys. I think responsibility is heaped on it and they don't get it. And I think that courage is heaped on them in a different way. And they like want it, but also I think don't quite understand. Like you look at like, you know, like a masculine caricature, like Captain America or something, right? Like he has courage, you know that, right? But it's a different thing to ask like, okay, well, being a boy in America today, how do you get to that like Captain America level of courage, right? And that's not necessarily the kind of courage, right? But that like that level of it. I think these are like applicable to anybody or like... they're valuable for anybody. You don't have to be a man, but I think that they do hold this like specific like relevance to the masculine experience as a young person.
How do you see the Flying Cloud program, these three words fitting into Farm and Wilderness and the other camps in our programs?
Totally. So I have that's like a question that I've turned over forever. And I think a lot of people who really care about Flying Cloud have, right? It has this specific niche. Oh, I think I actually maybe heard this from Tulio, but I think this was a thing that you and him were talking about actually, about how we position FC and TL. TL's thing being go bigger, go bigger. And FC's thing possibly being like go deeper, like delve deeper, right? Which I really like that. I think that Flying Cloud is a place that we can go really deep. I think it's a place we can be really real. That's not to say that you're not doing that at Timberlake. Of course you are. We're doing that at all of our programs. But I think at Flying Cloud, we have this special benefit of being such a small space, having a lot of like nimbleness in our programs, in our like operations, but also really having the ability to be like pretty receptive, both to like the needs of the moment and to like what our campers are bringing up and like how they're presenting. I think that that like realness and that like depth and the receptivity, I think that does position Flying Cloud to really have a specific niche of like, I think we do things at Flying Cloud that like probably not, possibly not any other summer camp in the country is doing. But definitely I would say we're pretty unique in what our programming is like.
Yeah, I really respect about your camp. Smallness doesn't feel like the right word. There feels like a connotation there, but
totally.
Constrained isn't, it's not something along those lines, but the ability to, you once mentioned this at some meeting at some point, but to be in the field that is at Flying Cloud and really have a sense of like where every person in the community is and kind of what they're doing, right? You just have that sense and that it's real easy to gather the community, and that physicality of that space means that you like genuinely can see each camper and get a sense of like, where are they on a given day? Whereas for us at the larger camps, we have a lot of systems in place to make sure that happens in a way that feels more authentic, maybe, right? Not to diss my own camp, but like as a way of saying like, hey, like you just wake up and you can see that kid. And I think that's really kind of amazing.
Yeah. In that way. There's something to group size. Like I think we use the word community a lot, and I think it is applicable in a lot of different ways. There's something really special at Flying Cloud about like, when your friend is having an off day, you know it. When someone else is like going through something, or maybe they're like exploring something new, like everyone notices and everyone like is not like pushed to necessarily, but our program really encourages us to like recognize and like appreciate.
Really be seen.
Really be seen. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, exactly.
In a way that's difficult at larger camps for kids to be seen.
Yeah.
They might find their niche or their group, but not necessarily have a whole community that is I see.
There's something there of like, once a group size is something like over, you know, like over 50 or 60 people, you just can't be tuned in the same way. It's not that you can't be tuned in, but it's different.
Yeah, completely. I love these big thoughts and kind of really been. let's dive into the program, right? So what does Flying Cloud do really well?
Totally. So we teach earth skills. We teach nature connection. I think in a broad sense, we teach kids how to feel comfortable in nature, how to thrive in nature. I like to say it's not about surviving. It's about thriving. And we like really show them, I think, how resilient they are. We ask things of them that they have never been asked to do before. And we ask them to try things that they would not only like they wouldn't have considered trying before, they wouldn't have even thought about, right? So there is this like great expansiveness of our campers' minds around nature. They live in nature. They sleep in canvas tents. They sleep on bunks made of sawdust on the ground that they make themselves with the help of their counselor. Those, like hearing those words alone, you might be like, wow, that sounds not that comfortable, right? Like maybe as a city.
That's what I think.
Totally. And like for our campers coming in from cities, I think a lot of them, and you know, from everywhere too, but I think particularly our campers from cities like are feeling like, oh man, how could I do that? Maybe looking at a lot of our program, like we're cooking everything over fire. We don't have electricity. We don't have watches. We pump all our own water. There's no phone to retreat to, right? Like it's not that there aren't spaces to retreat to, but the comforts that we're so used to, we can't retreat to. And so I think that like it's intimidating to people, but then they get there and they find this learned sense of comfort. They find what's comfortable. They find actually how to meet their own needs. And at the same time, they're like being encouraged to try all these things that actually they're going to succeed at because we know how to support them through it and we know what they're capable of. But like to get to some of the like, that's like, yeah, big picture ideas. Yeah, we want our kids to learn about nature. We want them to like use their bodies. We want them to make things and build things and craft things. We also like to like really have a variety. Just like I think there's a reason why summer camp, you know, I say the word summer camp, you might be thinking of like, you know, like arts and crafts might be one thing that comes to mind, right? Like on the Family Feud board, like arts and crafts is up there. And there's a reason for that. It's because like that engages a certain kind of child at a certain moment in their life. So at Flying Cloud, we also like to like encourage our staff to teach what they're passionate about. There's going to be people with all kinds of passions coming in that I don't necessarily know what they are, but I want them teaching it to kids. Cause that's what they're going to be. They're going to be awesome at it probably, or at least have an advantage.
Can you give us some examples of that passionate teaching? What are kids learning at Flying Cloud?
Great question. Yeah. So last summer we had a staff coming in really excited about gardening. And so like he was talking to kids about gardening. We were started to work on a pollinator garden. It's actually not quite finished yet. That's fine. It's a project for next year. We've had folks coming in with skills around like natural building, like role-playing games. There's been this like thread of Dungeons and Dragons, which is like a really funny contrast. We've had like martial arts, we've had acting and improv. We've had obviously a lot of like specific kinds of nature skills, journaling, drawing, that kind of thing.
Fire.
Yeah. That's sort of a given.
Yeah. Just want to make sure listeners know though, we're like, you know, fire.
Right.
Yeah.
So to kick in like some of our sort of like the programming that you could count on seeing at Flying Cloud, right? Fire building, friction fire specifically. Mm-hmm. So like flint and steel or like bow drill. I know you all do that. Some of that at TL2.
Not at the same level as you all do, right?
Not at the same level.
I think it's really great that y'all do that.
But I think I do think there's overlap though, right?
Absolutely.
Like, yeah. So like fire building, fire making. We do a lot of like, I always like to pitch like debris shelters, animal tracking, plant ID, like learning how to use a field guide is like kind of its own skill, right? Like you can go out and be inspired. It's going to be an important skill for you to learn to come back and know how to learn about what you just saw that you're excited about. Things like L&T, we teach sort of like, I do think that like our specific niche is like, it is a little bit removed from this like common Western idea of like wilderness skills. Like I think like I say wilderness skills, you might think like map and compass. We actually like almost never use maps and compasses except on trips. But we're also teaching some of those skills, right? Like LNT, we're teaching how to set up tents. When we go on trips, we teach, you know, all the things that you might learn if you're going to be a part of a trip or want to go on a backpacking trip yourself later, where and how to pitch a tent, what the LNT principles are, how to filter water, how to boil water, right? Like how to look for food, what kinds of wood you might want to look for if you want to try and start a fire.
I think these are great. When I think of Flying Cloud and the other Nineveh camps, it's really the wilderness side of farm and wilderness, right?
Yeah.
All the camps have some aspect of it that is very central to who y'all are and the programming that you are doing, right? You're not doing construction in the same way. You're not doing like rope swing swimming in the same way. You really are honing in and focusing in kind of a really delightful way how to live simply and have these skills,
yeah.
Which does to me connect right back to the idea of like appreciation, courage, and responsibility in the wilderness, which means you know how to exist in it. You know how to do it thoughtfully and well. And again, they do it at Timberlake, but I think the depth and intentionality at Flying Cloud has always been a pretty amazing thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Can I share an anecdote?
Please do.
Okay, cool. So last summer we were putting together a senior camper capstone. We had just a few senior campers, so it had to look a little bit different than what we were used to. We set them up to be undertaking this one challenge that they didn't think was going to be their capstone. It was actually like a totally different experience that we were setting up on the sly. Our assistant director went out and pulled them when it was time to bring them to what their challenge actually was going to be for the night. It was like the middle of the night. They already had their shelters built. They had their fires going. They were like barefoot, like hunkered down, ready, you know? The way he tells the story to me, he said he like didn't use a lot of words, and he was like, "Hey, like actually, like there's something else happening tonight. Like come with me, you know." And so these campers, like you know, these are 14-year-olds, and they're like, "Yep, totally." Throw their Flying Cloud blankets on, no shoes, off into the woods. And it was only afterwards that my assistant director Aldis was recounting to me, like, "Yeah, there was not a peep about like, oh, what about my stuff? Where are we going? Like what's happening?" They were just like, "Oh yeah, we can walk through the woods in the dark behind you. And we know that you're like leading us to something that's powerful. And like, we know that we're senior campers. So there's like probably going to be a challenge thrown in. Let's go." It's beautiful, right?
Yeah.
The ability of a 14-year-old to say like, "I didn't need to know where my shoes were because I know that I'm not going to get hurt walking through the woods in the dark."
I love that. Yeah. Like that is the power of summer camp, but again, the power of like the community that is Flying Cloud. Let's talk about campers for a second. Right. And
yeah.
So, you know, our two camps get compared all the time. There's often a question of, you know, which camp between really our two, but all of them, but between our two that might be good for my kid. Yeah. Tell me a bit more of like which campers do well at Flying Cloud.
Yeah, definitely. So our program is actually super broad. Flying Clouders in particular, I think, love to play up and intense it is. And like for good reason, right? Like they're proud of it and that's awesome. I think there are some Flying Clouders that come to camp and even from like other camp, summer camp experiences, and they don't experience it as much other than like an excellent summer camp experience that just happens to be outside all the time. Mm. Right. And so like the challenges scale down, the activities scale down. You don't have to go out and do like an all night fire tending experience as part of the experience. You can just come, like there are some challenges that every camper will get. And I think the physical challenge of just being there is a lot for some campers, but for that 11-year-old, that's like feeling a little bit daunted about like being in the woods, like being hardcore, like it actually doesn't have to be that hardcore experience. We have some campers that come for four full summers and are like, yeah, like this is my camp. Like I never really went in for the big challenges. That's fine. That's like not everyone's bag.
What would you say to a parent who is maybe listening and is trying to decide between our two camps, right? What are the specific supports in place at Flying Cloud, maybe for campers that they would get there?
Totally. Right. So I would say probably the biggest thing I would point to, aside from the intentionality in our program and our like attention to those like maybe younger campers who might be coming or campers who might feel intimidated of any age. Our staff are super, super well trained. They understand that this is an intimidating experience. They understand that it's physically challenging. Our camp has been running for 50 years. So we actually know all of those beats that tend to like shake campers out and make it like really hard for them. And we have systems in place for those beats. So like the first night in the lodge is actually a really important time. We make sure our staff know like, hey, first night in the lodge, like that's not just like a, hey, we chat for a little bit and then we go to bed. Like that's actually a time to like really connect and make it clear like what, you know, what you're here for, what kinds of like supports you're able to offer and like what the experience is going to be like. We know that that first night shakes campers out and like makes it hard for them and scares them, right? They want to come in and immediately feel held by staff. And so our staff know that and they're ready for it. We also, we know that like the first rain is going to be hard. We know that the first of those like big all camp challenges is going to be hard. Our staff are just like ready to go. And so at Flying Cloud, our staff to camper ratio is actually about 1-2, which is incredible. Mm-hmm. It really means, and I've heard this from our staff too, it really means that they have the time to address when something is going wrong. They always have that moment to step out and sit with that camper that's having a hard time. Or like grab those two campers that aren't understanding the impact of what they're doing. Say like, hey, this is what's going on. I care about you. What can we do here? How can we help?
Yeah, there's a really interesting strand and thread there around being prepared for the hardships that are going to happen.
Yeah.
Right. That we are not a group of camps, and particularly Flying Cloud, where we're going to shy away from what's sometimes called the type two fun, right? The fun that's not so fun in the moment, but later on is a great story, or the like discomfort that comes from new experiences, right? And so often it's easy for a kid to potentially go through life with a lot of discomfort avoided or mitigated, right? Because good parents, good teachers want to like, you know, mitigate that and kind of help them out. Right. But what I feel like I'm really hearing you say is like, that's not something I'll shy away from. And your staff are ready for that moment when it's torrential rain and the homesickness kicks in and everything feels like it's the worst when it really isn't.
Totally.
Yeah.
You could characterize it as high challenge, high support. I actually think what it is appropriate challenge, appropriate support. Mm. So for some of those campers, it like feels like just a little bit of challenge. The challenge is be there, right? But actually the support they need is to have staff who are like really ready to hold them through the hard moments. So the support scales with the challenge.
So I think the concept of appropriate challenge and appropriate support is a really interesting one. And we hear that in a lot of educational spaces. And when I think of Flying Cloud and what support I might have needed or still need, is this idea of no devices, right? And while all of our camps are unplugged and kids don't have phones, at Flying Cloud, you take it a little bit farther, right? Not even having flashlights at night. And sometimes when I talk to families, there's that fear and concern and maybe coming from their camper or not. But I think what that allows is this really unique space of darkness that doesn't necessarily feel threatening. It feels magical. And I'm thinking of the side of stars that you can see there where there's no lights and the like sparks fly upwards is something we see of the kind of fires that you all do in this really held magical space. So let's talk a little about that. Tell me a little bit about that magic, that liminal magic that Flying Cloud has.
Right. So it does sort of come back to this piece of like, it can feel like a challenge, even just being at Flying Cloud, right? And so for a lot of our like 11-year-olds or younger campers, that can feel like enough, right? Just being there. Right. Like seeing in the dark without a flashlight, getting around, like getting to the bathroom, right? Like these sort of like basic needs of daily living. And I think in the kind of lives that a lot of folks living in America are living right now, we feel like we need all of these things to not only just to like have the kinds of daily life that we want to have, but also like to be basic, to be comfortable in a basic sense. And I think like a part of the magic of Flying Cloud is stepping out of relationship with those particular things, our phones, our email addresses, our schedules, and like finding out what's underneath, which in truth is actually much more holding of us than we realize. And so like that, you're speaking to like the subliminal magic part. What came to mind when you're asking that question for me is like, actually when you are in the dark without a flashlight, oh, there's this excellent poem about this. I think it's to go with the light is to know the light, to know the dark, go dark, go without sight. And so like our campers actually find really quickly, particularly the older ones that then like have this sort of low key superpower of like, actually you can see in the dark. And you actually don't need a flashlight unless it's like really cloudy or a new moon, but you wouldn't know that unless you've tried it. Right. And so like, it's the same with that feeling of discomfort that you might feel of like, oh, I'm outside. I'm in like air that might be cold. It might be hot. It might be dry. It might be wet. But then there is this like magical piece of like, you know, maybe you get like a morning rain, you're wearing a raincoat, you're like feeling maybe a little uncomfortable and whatever. And then in the afternoon, the sun comes out and you're sitting on the hill and you're like, oh, I got through that. Not only am I fine, I got through that. And now I get to like enjoy this magic of the steam coming off the ground. Or it's like, okay, I can make it to the bathroom in the night without a flashlight, right? I'm gonna go give it a try. You get out there, actually you can see just fine. There's plenty of light. The stars are out. It's beautiful. The clearing is quiet and you're seeing like the fire of your friends off in the distance. That's that feeling of subliminal magic that I think like helps people feel like actually the comfort that they need is what they have.
And this feels like such an important message as we, you know, this pandemic we all went through and so many kids having to be in online learning and being tied to screens. This feels this remembrance of the ability to exist at night in the dark feels like so essential to where we all are right now.
Yeah. There's a lot of good research out there about the need for darkness and quiet in human beings. This is like just coming out. It's very exciting for me because I'm like, yeah, that's Flying Cloud.
Yeah, totally. So let's shift gears a little bit. And for our listeners, I mentioned at the top of my introduction a bit of the history of Flying Cloud and where that name comes from. And Elliot, you are in a unique position, I think for many, many reasons, of guiding a community that is going through some identity change, right? And for folks who are not real aware of what's going on in summer camping industry, a lot of camps are grappling with origin stories and who are they and where are they coming from and some cultural appropriation of some Native American practices. And it has hit differently across farm and wilderness and our different programmings, but it has been a particularly, I think, tense conversation at Flying Cloud, right? That you need to hold. And so let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about these changes for folks, for alumni or people who are listening. Let's talk about those changes.
Totally. So our listeners may or may not know this, and there's obviously more to the story, but my understanding is that actually the phrase like summer camp is actually kind of a I don't want to say it's like an appropriation. Maybe some people would consider it that, but that actual expression comes from this like white person's understanding of indigenous movement patterns, right? Where there's a place where you go for the winter and that is where you are hanging out with your people. And there's a place you go for the summer and there's different food there and different needs being met there.
I'd never heard that. That's so interesting.
Yeah. And it makes a lot of sense when we have some like Abenaki folks who the Abenaki are one of our like local regional Native American groups. There's a couple different tribes in the area and
our camps are on their land.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. So Flying Cloud is on Abenaki land.
And like, it's a big thing that we're all grappling with, which is a very existential question of should camps exist or not. Right. And I think that's very fascinating, but yeah, let's get back to like, what has Flying Cloud been through in the last few years?
Yeah. So. So Flying Cloud has been through a lot of changes, over the years. Like I said, we've been doing what we're doing for 50 years. Even just in my time, I've been at Flying Cloud for, this will be my 10th summer. Very exciting. I know you're awesome.
Congrats.
10-year club. Yeah. Yep. And when I first showed up at Flying Cloud, as you know, our campers were being housed in teepees. They were being given nature names, which we weren't calling them that at the time, but even like 5 years prior, they were called like Indian names. And there were actually a lot of, over the years, there were a lot of people, as I understand it, who were a part of the community who were really influential and were saying, actually, we need to do this differently. The movement is coming. Things are going to change. And like we're putting in the work in their day. And in my time at Flying Cloud, we have moved from teepees, nature names, and like a lot of other practices that I would say were taken well-intentioned from Native people in like a pan-Indian way and being brought in for the development of our campers. And can't fault them for wanting to develop our campers. That's what we're here for. Now I think that there is actually a cohesive vision of where we're going, right? So Flying Cloud has spent in the last 10 years a fair bit of time like moving away. What I really want us to do instead is to move towards what the actual goals of the program are. Those goals, like in part, could be referenced back to courage, appreciation, and responsibility. I think there are also a couple like guiding north stars of what our program can and will offer. Those things are like a lot of the stuff that is present in the nature awareness movement. I think the natural cycles is a really good north star for us. And a lot of what we have been doing is really worthwhile and like will not change. Like the core of our program is and always has been powerful and developing. It has been a lot of our practices that we have needed to look at really critically and change and do differently.
I'm a big fan of natural cycles. I'll drop them in the show notes for folks who are interested. And what I feel like you were grappling with is this thing that has meant so much to so many people.
Yeah. Right?
And the feeling that if something changes, somehow it's affecting my experience previously
holding it,
right? This idea of changing names of institutions or things like that gives lots of feels and lots of directions. But I think what I've witnessed you do in conjunction with a couple of directors before you, but really I think the intentionality you were bringing right now to making sure that, I guess, the essence of Flying Cloud, the big rocks aren't really shifting, right?
Correct.
Kids are in nature in the way that you're talking about. They're living in small intentional community in the way that they always have. Mm-hmm. They are experiencing fire and the rain and all these things.
Yeah.
And finding ways to do it that potentially aren't, you know, harmful or stolen ideas from others.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. We are not shy about the fact that, Flying Cloud was a place that was like actively doing cultural appropriation. Mm-hmm. A lot of people knew along the way that that wasn't right for us. And we know where we're going now and it's not cultural appropriation. Yeah. But I think there's something really important too, like in recognizing the fact that we are we're living on Abenaki land. We're doing a lot of things that Abenaki people have done and are still doing. So like bow drill, for example, is an ancestral skill been passed down by indigenous people, not just in Vermont or in the Northeast or in North America, but actually all over the world for a very long time. It's something that you can come to on your own if you live enough time and enough generations outside. And that's like what's happened. And there are some things like bow drill that we're not going to stop doing. And it's not because like the act of doing bow drill is not culturally appropriative. It is like the coming in and doing it and not recognizing the history there. That part is problematic. And I think that there is actually a future in which we can understand all of the ways that we are walking in the footprints of a lot of people, including indigenous North American people, and saying, hey, we are not the first person to love and appreciate these woods. We're not the first people to be doing some of these skills that we're doing, but we're going to like recognize the fact that those people have lived here, still live here, and like this still means something to them, just like it means something to us. And then actually we can be allies with indigenous people and be working towards our collective liberation together.
Right? Yeah. There's a few points that I think are really, I want to lift up. I think you're really speaking to a point that I've heard in conversations when, you know, folks response to, well, you know, you're changing the name, you know, the name is there to educate others, which, you know, may or may not have been happening or not, but you're still holding on to that essence, right? This is a thing that is valuable to know in the world, right? And there's a respect to continue to pass down this knowledge. Yeah. We're going to give it a little bit more context,
right?
Which doesn't mean that how it was taught in the past, right?
Yeah.
Degrades that any, but just like, let's continue to do better by our actions.
Yeah.
And I think that I'm really proud to be a part of an organization, Farm Wilderness, that has been grappling with this for a long time. And we are still, you know, figuring out what is our next step. But we're an org that isn't simply like changing names and moving on.
Yeah.
Right. That like, check, we've done the thing, which is so often a criticism of any of these kind of movements. And you sort of alluded to it, but are starting to engage with both the Akwesasne and the Abenaki tribes.
Yeah.
Right. And saying, how can we be in conversation with those tribes, not see them as a monolith, because they have folks in there have lots of different ideas and feelings of this work that you and us have been doing.
And the work is new too. We have partnerships, we have connections. Those are still small and new and young, and they're going to grow big and strong.
I think last piece on this point is going back to the name Flying Cloud, right? And it is named after an individual that was a part of our history, like I mentioned at the top of the show. And so I sometimes wonder if that has allowed Flying Cloud, the institution, to potentially ease through some of the things that camps who might have names that are either straight up stolen from indigenous folks or some weird fake word around it, which doesn't feel real great. I think it allowed this kind of space to navigate that really well. And I am getting the sense right now that like right now where the organization is, we're not changing that name anytime soon.
Right? Oh, definitely sort of like not.
Tippy-toeing into that, right? Just from, you know, we want to continue to honor that person.
Yeah. Yeah. No, right? we're not going to be changing the name Flying Cloud anytime soon.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think actually there is a part of Flying Cloud's, there is a part of the strategy and tactic of Flying Cloud's future here, which is, we in a lot of ways are going to be sourcing the inspiration and the magic and the power here from like, what is us, right? Like the inspiration in the source is like our collective understanding, knowledge, connection with nature. We're not stealing anymore. We're not taking anymore. And like, there's going to be times when, there's going to be times when that won't go perfectly. But I think that's like, this is a really good example of that. We're like, Flying Cloud was the name of a person that we cared about. That person had a huge impact on this community. And like, that's where it comes from. And it does, like, I think that the name can come across a little funny, right? Like, you know, I think like the name of Camp Timber, like, actually makes like perfect sense. Like, there's a lake and like, who knows?
Maybe there's lots of trees there.
There's trees, right. Yeah. You know, and it's like something a little different to be like Flying Cloud. Like, what does that mean? It is literally the name of a person.
It is. I mean, when I hear the word Flying Cloud, if I had no context, I think of like a Mario level.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah, Rainbow Road.
Yeah, that's what comes to my brain. So where do you see Flying Cloud in the next 5-10 years?
So we are at this like pivotal point where I think that, like I said, this cohesive vision of where we're going has started to materialize, right? I think in the next 5-10 years is going to be the manifesting of that vision. Our work to get there is next. And so like actually the goal isn't necessarily the hard part. Setting the goal is sometimes the easy part. Now comes the hard work of getting there. But it's like very heartening for me as someone who's been around for a pretty long time now to see that we like have this sense of like where our niche is and how to get there.
bring it back to you. I don't know about you, but I think about legacy a lot. I think it's hard to not be a camp director, an institution as old as ours, not think about the lineage that we were all coming from.
Yeah.
So what do you want to be remembered for?
It's a great question. I don't know. I think a lot of people often reference like a religious background as some reason why they feel humble. I feel like a very humble person, so I like get a little uncomfortable with the idea of like, yeah, leave your mark, legacy. And I think that I would like my legacy within the Flying Cloud mythos to be like a person who carried us through some hard times. I came on in 2020, which meant that I was technically director, but I was not running a camp.
A lot going on that year.
And there was a part of me that was worried that Flying Cloud would be closed a year or two from that. I would love to be able to look back on my time at Flying Cloud and say, right, I was there for some of the hardest moments and some of the lowest moments. And like, it was Elliot that like was at the helm as we like drew our new course.
You're shouldering a big weight in a way that I do not envy. In fact, glad I don't have it, but I want to lift up that you're holding that. I really enjoyed this conversation. It feels like many more to come.
Yeah.
And hopefully, this is a new podcast. Maybe it'll last through the spring. Maybe we'll come back to the fall. I think there's a masculinity conversation.
Really
interesting to have.
Absolutely.
But I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me on. It's been a real pleasure, as always.
And that was my conversation with Elliot, the incredible director of Camp Flying Cloud. If you'd like to register, apply for a job at, or just learn more, check out farmandwilderness.org. We're on YouTube, where you'll find staff talking about their experiences and so many more videos. You'll also find us on Instagram and on TikTok, where we are featuring staff testimonials. This episode has been a part of our limited series for spring 2023. If you subscribe, leave us a good review, we might just be able to come back this fall. Thanks to our guest, Elliot. Original music by Emmett Powers. Recording and editing done by myself, W. Thanks to everyone at Farm and Wilderness who helped make our summers possible. Our camp vocabulary word for this week comes from Flying Cloud, who is so unique they have their own units of measure, which as a former math teacher makes my heart happy. It's actually a phrase, one heaping buttload. This is a volumetric unit. It is the amount of firewood you can carry between your fully loaded, outstretched arms with fingers just barely able to touch. One heaping buttload. With that, remember, camp magic is real, y'all. Until next time.